Brent Silby teaches philosophy in Christchurch, New Zealand. He's also published various journal and magazine articles, including one called The Simulated Universe. This article appears in a recent issue of Philosophy Now magazine. Brent Silby talked to Anne Strainchamps about the simulated universe argument.
Well, the simulated universe argument was put forward by Nick Bostrom. He's a philosopher, and he put forward the argument in 2003 in an article called Are You Living in a Computer Simulation? Basically, his article concludes that there's a high probability that we actually do live in a computer simulated universe. And he gets there through three or four quite basic assumptions. The first is that it's possible for a computer to simulate anything that behaves like a computer. You know, that's a fact, it's true. And when you think about the universe, it's basically a rule-following system. You've got the laws of physics that act on particles, subatomic particles, atoms, all that sort of thing, and govern their behavior. So in principle, given enough knowledge about the universe, if I knew all of the laws of physics and knew all of the positions of every subatomic particle in the universe, I could create a computer program that would simulate that behavior, right down to the neurons in my brain.
So according to this theory, the Matrix is real and we're living in it.
Yeah, well, the Matrix is a little different because they were actually kind of embedding information in the person's brain. This is a little bit far-reaching. The whole universe is a simulation. It's not that I'm lying in a chamber being fed information by some evil scientist. This universe is actually running inside of a computer.
So in that sense, it's more like The Sims or Second Life.
Yeah, kind of, except from the outside, you wouldn't be able to look in and actually see me if you were on the outside of the simulated universe looking in. All you would actually see are basically huge data structures, lots of numbers and algorithms acting on the numbers. In fact, it would probably not be possible to determine which group of numbers represents me and which group of numbers represent you. You know, it's just too many of them. But you would know that the universe is actually being simulated inside this thing. Once you started it, you might not be able to tell where it would go. You know, so there's no point in actually sort of getting in there and having a look at it, running experiments on the people who inhabit that universe. It is quite interesting, though, because when you think about it, it's actually possible to simulate a universe. And if that's possible, Nick Bostrom says, well, we probably will do that one day. And if we do it, that shows that it is possible, and the inhabitants of our simulated universe would probably grow the technology to develop their own simulated universe, and the inhabitants of that simulated universe would do the same thing, and so on and so forth. And then what you end up with is this almost infinitely long chain of parent-child universes and only one real universe. So for Nick Bostrom, just running the math on that, there's probably more likelihood that we exist in one of the billions of simulations rather than the real universe.
So following the chain backwards, who would be running this simulation?
Oh, well, we would never know. There's no way we could know. It might be a species like us who, for whatever reason, decided that they would want to run a simulated universe. Maybe they'd, you know, sort of have moral reasons for wanting to do so. They might want to recreate people who have lived before, resurrect them. Who knows? I'm not actually sure why anyone would want to run a simulated universe if you can't actually look inside and see what's going on.
One of the first people to propose this simulated universe theory is physicist Frank Tipler. What was his argument in favor of the simulated universe?
I don't think Tipler thought that we actually existed, you know, currently in a simulated universe. He'd been theorizing about this stuff since the 80s, and his most famous formulation was in his 1994 book, The Physics of Immortality. What he thinks is that we will actually one day develop the technology in order to build a simulated universe. And if not us, maybe some other species in this universe will do that. Basically, the reason we would do that is to correct a moral injustice of people living their lives, experiencing pain and suffering, and then dying. So what Tipler believes is that our very distant descendants will have a moral obligation to create a simulated universe and recreate all us so that we can live sort of an eternal life, you know, sort of maybe like a heaven-like existence.
So we'll just keep replicating ourselves, world without end, forever and ever?
Yeah, it's quite interesting how he describes that. I mean, when you think about it, you need a huge, huge amount of computing power to do that sort of thing. And, you know, one of the problems I have with Tipler's argument is like, how could they a species that lives in 10 billion times replicate me, they don't know anything about me. So Tipler says, well, that's not a problem because they have sufficient computing power to replicate every possible universe. So in one of these possible universes, there will be a me.
So this is an ingenious theory. What do you think of it? Do you think we're living in a simulated universe?
Well, there's no way to know. I mean, I understand the logic behind what Nick Bostrom tells us, and I can see it as a possibility, but I've got a few issues with some of the assumptions they make. I mean, one of the problems I have with it is the vast amount of computing power required to do this. To simulate a whole universe, wouldn't you need a computer the size of the universe to do that? He talks about computers the size of small worlds. Frank Tipler talks about a mega computer that's actually built at the end of the universe as the universe heads towards the so-called Big Crunch, or he calls it Omega Point. And at that time, he sort of does this trick with math that shows that the oscillations of the universe would create an infinite amount of energy to power a computer. And even though the universe has got a finite length of time available, the simulation would actually have an infinite amount of time available because of, you know, some trick he does with the math. But it all seems trickery to me. I'm also a little bit worried about Tipler's motives. I think he's got an ulterior motive. He talks about the creators of this as being godlike and that sort of thing. And I think, oh, you know, that's getting a little bit sneaky there.
Yeah, it makes me think of Bill Gates.
Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps the future replicant of Bill Gates will finally have amassed enough computing power to create the entire Microsoft world.
Yeah, just the way he wants it. Well, I mean, that's a problem. Imagine if the simulation was running on Windows Vista. How reliable would it be?
Well, let's say for a moment that Professor Tipler and the other theorists of the simulated universe are correct and that we are living in a giant sim. Is there any way we could possibly know that?
Well, I think to find out, you'd need to look for glitches in the simulation or Easter eggs, maybe an Easter egg left behind by the creator of the simulation. It wouldn't be in an obvious place like in the movie 13th Floor, if you've ever seen that. It came out in the late 90s and they go on this long drive out towards the mountains and they encounter the shimmering green wall, which is the edge of the known universe. It wouldn't be obvious like that, but it could be something really subtle, like maybe a message embedded in math. I remember reading a book by Carl Sagan, a novel called Contact, and one of the punchlines in that book involved the calculation of the digits of pi to several hundred billion decimal places or something, and they found a secret code embedded in the digits of pi. Now, that seemed quite fascinating to me. Who could put a code in pi? The only way you could get a code in pi would be to invent pi, but that's a sort of like a law of math. So the only person who could embed a code in pi would be the creator of math or the creator of the universe, which is quite a nice thought, really. So I think that's where we'd have to look.
I don't suppose anybody's found any codes embedded in math?
No, not so far as I know. But interesting, actually, if there was an imperfection or perhaps something you could interpret as an imperfection discovered back in the early 2000s by Paul Davies, and John Webb. What they discovered through observations of distant quasars was something that looked like a shift in the speed of light. Now, if you know anything about physics, you know that the speed of light doesn't change. So that it's possible to perhaps interpret that as a glitch in the simulation.
Could there be any other explanation for the shift in the speed of light?
Yeah, well, I think so. The shift in the speed of light was only one way to actually interpret the data. What they actually found was a change in the fine structure constant, which is basically it's a constant which is comprised of the speed of light, the charge on the electron, and Planck's constant. Now, it's still a significant discovery because constants aren't meant to change, but there's no way of telling which aspect of that constant did change. And some physicists think, well, maybe it's, you know, something to do with a universal change in the structure of the vacuum. So it might just be something that's bound to happen in the universe anyway. There's so much we don't know. But it's still interesting because constants don't change. So maybe, who knows, maybe it was a glitch.
And I suppose we may not ever be able to prove that we do live in a simulated universe, but equally, we can't really prove that we don't.
Yeah, that's true. There's no way of knowing either way. And from a scientific perspective, I guess that's one of the problems with it. It's unfalsifiable, and science doesn't like theories or hypotheses that are unfalsifiable, but it's still fun to look at. And, you know, maybe the fact that you can't prove it one way or another is what makes it so engaging for us to sort of look through it and try to discover some way that we can actually overcome that problem and find some sort of proof or evidence. It's the same with Descartes' evil demon. There's no way of actually proving that we aren't just a disembodied soul being fed information by an evil demon. There's no way of knowing. It's like the ultimate skeptical argument. It's lots of fun.
Well, thanks for giving us something to think about in the dark of the night.
My pleasure. And think about this. The runners of the simulation, it's most likely some sort of university institution. Let's hope they don't have a cut in funding.
Brent Silby's the author of The Simulated Universe. It appears in Philosophy Now magazine. Silby spoke with Anne Strangechamps.